Welcome to Tigers SRD with two hosts who always start on second. Chris Brown.
Never-ending parade of mediocrity.
And Roger Castillo.
The celebration of seven wins in a row. We were talking about that a little bit beforehand. Akil Badu, you know, is just, again, having, he had two home runs in the series. That home run to right center was a bomb, like an absolute bomb. I was, came away impressed. And again, it was one of those things where I was looking at Badu in terms of just being batting leadoff and looking at how many lineups Hinge was using with all the injuries aside. I mean, so I'll start with you, Uper. We mentioned Robbie Grossman. He's come up a couple times. Batting average doesn't do him justice a little bit. He's been able to provide power and get out and walk and get on base. But the outfield as a whole, I mean, the outfield seems like it's kind of finally calmed down. He had Jacoby Jones in there. Now your boys with Victor Reyes, and I understand your, you know, your love for him, and that's fine. You know, to each your own. But even with all the injuries and everything, I mean, they let Nomar Marza walk, and he's on, give him his unconditional release, which is, a lot of Tiger fans were like, thank God. So, but yeah, again, Akil Badu, what a series.
You know, you just think about back to the Rule 5 draft, and you just think of the guy with the name that sounded kind of cool. But you didn't know anything about him, at least most people didn't, other than he was hurt a lot, and he hadn't even been above double A or A ball. Was it high A? Might have been high A, whatever it was. Yeah. It's just been really something to see the improvement, because he started off hot and then got cold, but he's not even walking as much as we thought he might. But he's showing that power and the base running combo that I see no reason why it should tail off. He's athletic, you know, and it's just a lot of fun to watch him these days. I've been struck this week, just to get off the field for a second, the home runs that he's hit and the bases clearing triple. With the fans back in the stands, after the COVID season with nobody in the stands, the dullness that was, plus the team wasn't good, now with a dose of winning and with a guy like Badu getting people kind of charged up, I've been watching people in the stands jump around and hugging when he gets a big hit. And it's so cool to see. It's just, it, you know, it, to me, Comerica Park has looked like a morgue now, rightfully, for several years. And I'm just kind of happy to see the people jumping around and having a good time with baseball, because that's what it should be about. And if it takes a guy like Badu to lead that, that's kind of why I compared him to Fidrich a little bit the other day. Now, he's Fidrich light. He's not going to be on the cover of Rolling Stone, and he's not going to be on the evening news with the Walter Cronkite and such, okay, and all that kind of thing. But it's similar in the fact that people are just happy when he's doing good stuff, and they're excited, and they're buying in. And I think when they buy into that player, that means they're going to buy into the team if the team is playing well. So that's what's made this last week a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is he's actually, by the advanced stats, but he was actually having his worst month of the year because it's kind of been like a tale of three different seasons now. So he got out to that amazing start with all the power and then the tons of strikeouts. And then basically it was like he took a month off from hitting just to walk a bunch. And then in June, he was walking and hitting, but he wasn't hitting for power. And now the power's come back, but he's, as you said, he's not taking many walks. I think he's got two walks in July.
Yeah.
But what he's doing now, he's still working the counts. And instead of, you know, trying to work walks, basically, he's working it to get a pitch that he can drive. And he's doing that now. So it's now – it's almost come full circle to where he was in April. But – it's a more mature approach, I would say. He's not like hijacking pitchers and driving the ball out. He's waiting, working himself into counts, and then hitting the ball hard. And he's not swinging and missing nearly as much as he did. So, yeah, I would like to see him walk a little bit more, especially if he's going to be the leadoff hitter. But he's still stealing bases. He's got extra base power. It's a fantastic story. It's one of the better stories in all of baseball this year, and it continues. And he feels legit. You know, I'm curious what his numbers will look like when he eventually faces lefties every day. because he does look a little bit overmatched against lefties at times. He's kind of bailing out of there, and especially against lefties with velocity. But that's just another step for him to take. He's 22. I mean, it's really remarkable.
Yeah. And another guy who took a step forward that I would, unfortunately, now is going to be out till maybe mid-September, as AJ Hinch reported to the reporter today, was Jake Rogers, who was hitting the ball for average. He was getting on base. He had a nice WRC plus over 100. And I mean, defensively, defensive run saves, defensive war was like around 3. I mean, he was doing very well. And defensive run saves, I think it was like 3. Yeah, 3. I'm sorry. I read it correctly. And it's going to be a big loss. I mean, Eric Haas has done a pretty good job. He surprised us. We've talked about this before, how he surprised us as a backup. You have Grayson Griner coming back up from Toledo, which, you know, the one thing that you lose with Haas catching full time is that ability to put him in left field, which he was actually pretty effective. He was actually a pretty effective left fielder. He had defensive run saved of 0. So, I mean, he was not going to hurt you out there, and he was showed some pretty good speed. So, that being said, now you have Juan Centerio, I believe that's his name. That's the other backup catcher available down in Toledo. And then, really, that's, unless I'm missing somebody, that's really about it. I mean, there's, you have Dingler in Double A, but Dingler, you know, we've talked about this. I don't think he's ready for like a kind of assignment. So before fans are like, "Oh, I mean, bring up Dingler," no. The Jake Rogers blow is huge, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing kind of like the absolute ideal of what we would hope to see from Jake Rogers. He was like a strikeout rate of about 35%. Like, all right, it's going to happen. He's going to be like a Zunino. But he was walking enough. And like you said, when he was hitting the ball, he was hitting it hard and putting it in play and hitting for power. And that's – and with him, obviously, it was all about the defense. You know, this is a guy who – great defensive reputation, has had some issues with pass balls in the past, but he's always had a great throwing arm and controls the running game. And this is another situation where I feel like AJ Hinch and, you know, George Lombard, whoever else is there, you know, putting together the lineups has really, you know, put him in a lot of situations to succeed. They've done that with seemingly the whole team this year. And it's definitely a blow because it was a very positive sign from him. You know, injuries happen to everybody. We just kind of hope that this one doesn't lead to something more serious where he might be out for a full year or something like that.
Yeah, that's the worry I had. You know, is a Tommy John like surgery in his future with that injury? I don't know. I don't know enough about it. But do you think, I don't know if you've been, it seems like his leg kick is lower.
Yeah, it was something that we saw in spring training last year. He was working on, and he was able to kind of quiet his swing a little bit. And that's what we saw last year. We saw that power early on. You've been, you know, and speaking of Tommy John, by the way, Spencer Turnbull, as you know, as cryptic as I don't want to say it, that we expected, anticipated at some point he'd be injured, and I don't wish any injury upon anybody because it's unfortunate. Based off his history, and I think you said something about that too, right? Because, or both of you guys said something about his innings kind of reaching a point where he's pitching in kind of like a where he hasn't gone before. And he also, this was such a big blow for the Tigers right now. You still have Matthew Boyd, who's down in Lakeland right now, rehabbing, and Fulmer is supposed to expect to be starting back in Toledo here.
He pitched tonight.
He did pitch tonight? Okay. All right. I have not had a chance to watch the minor leagues at all this evening.
Tonight was the start of the countdown to Fulmer's next injury.
Well, unfortunately, yeah. I mean, but yeah, Fulmer, he pitched, an inning. Scoreless inning, gave up a double tonight. I'm looking. Cody Clemens hit 2 home runs tonight, 3 in the last 2 games. Fulmer, 1 hit, 1 walk, 1 strikeout in his first inning back.
He loves Indianapolis pitching.
That's just a joke. I hope he does great. I hope he's healthy. But just the history of the last 4 years has just been – the cavalcade of different injuries at different parts of his body. So you just wonder what's next.
Yeah. I mean, and that's my worry with Spencer Turnbull too. I'm in the process of doing a story about Turnbull, about what we should, or, you know, may be able to expect if and when he comes back. And you know, there's a great database of guys, Tommy John surgery recipients online. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to kind of filter it down to guys who had a similar number of major league innings as he did, And also roughly around the same age, you know, 28. Seems like the most common age for Tommy John surgery is about 27. So he's not too far off that. But, yeah, it's just a tough thing because, you know, he really seemed like he had taken that step forward. And not just because of the no-hitter. I mean, he was just pounding the strike zone this year. It was the sort of thing we've been wanting forever because he's always had nasty stuff. And it was just like, if you can just throw strikes, man, you don't even have to locate it all that well. And it seemed like he was doing it. But, Yeah, it's tough. So it'll be interesting to see, because one of the things sometimes you hope that guys have Tommy John surgery and they come back maybe even stronger. Maybe they've been dealing with nagging injuries for a long time. But we also see with Fulmer. You know, Fulmer was a great starting pitcher. Tommy John surgery came back, basically had nothing left, went to the bullpen and refound it. And they even, you know, he had one more start this year, but he looks like he's a reliever full time now. And we may see something similar with Turnbull.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And again, the Tigers will have to figure out what they're going to have to do here in the next couple of weeks, as they're going to be looking for pitching all over the place.
It's time for Rogelio and Chris to go inside the numbers.
All right, Chris, I still haven't downloaded your audio yet, but I think I'm going to have to use that next week. So
That mysterious audio that came over.
It was crazy. Somebody in the middle of the night sent it over. So, Chris, what's your inside number?
So, I actually have three numbers, and this is going to be another precursor to an article that I'm writing tomorrow. So, if you're watching live, then hey, you get the early bird special here. But my numbers are 19, 125, and 6. And so, that 19, that is the age of Colt Keith, Detroit Tigers' fifth round pick from last year, their sixth pick overall in the draft. And a really kind of shocking, un-Tigers-like pick that we were all excited about. And that 125 is his WRC plus this year in low A ball, albeit in just 114 plate appearances. But that's still pretty good. And that 6 is the total number of Tigers teenagers who have posted a WRC plus of 120 or better in a full season league, A ball, ever. Not ever, since 2006. That's okay. As far back as FanGraphs goes. So here are the other five, if you're curious. Cameron Maben in 2006, Nick Castellanos in 2011, Willie Adames and Domingo Leyba in 2014, and Isak Paredes in 2018. Now, if you notice anything those players have in common, it's that they've all been to the big leagues.
Yep.
Leyba hasn't done much, and Paredes hasn't really done anything either, but they've all been in the big leagues. Maben had a really strong career, basically. I mean, you know, he's never an all-star, but he's been around forever, part of some good teams. And Adames and Castellanos are all-stars. So it's one of those things you never want to make too much out of minor league stats, particularly in small samples like this. But there are a couple of things that are really strong indicators of future success. And one of them is performing well at a young age in full season ball. And one of the other indicators is a high walk rate. And right now, Colt Keith has a 14% walk rate. Again, very small sample. But the list of teenagers from any organization with a walk rate that high and a WRC plus above 20 is since 2006, there's just 18 of them. Wow. And it includes guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Fernando Tatis, Bryce Harper. Yeah, even down at the bottom, you get Akil Baddoo, oddly enough, from when he was in the Midwest League. Now, you drop it down to 12%, say that, you know, he doesn't walk quite at this clip, and you get a bunch of bums like Mike Trout, Byron Buxton, Carlos Correa. So, like I'm saying, you don't want to make too much of it. This is a small sample, and not every player who puts up stats like this in the low minors turns out to be a stud, but an awful high percentage of them do. It's really remarkable how many of these guys who do this at a young age end up becoming at least top 100 prospects, if not future regulars or all-stars. So that, along with some of the in-person stuff we've heard and read from James Shipman, is going to lead me to stuff Colt Keith pretty high on my Motor City Bengals top prospects ranking. Nice. I'll say that.
Yeah, it's gonna, our mid-season ranking is going to be coming out probably in the next couple of weeks. As we right now we are in the thinking pool or thinking tank of deciding how that's going to go. So, Uber, what's your inside the number this week?
Mine's a pretty simple one. Negative 39. That's where the Tigers were in defensive runs saved on July 18th. Last in baseball. Not good, obviously. But I think what it leads to is what the team is doing, whether it's Hinch's decision or Alavila or a combination of the whole staff, where they're plugging in Derek Hill and plugging in Zach Short. And it seems like Candelario is playing good defense of late. I would hope that they saw the defensive garbage that they put out there for the first couple months, and they're trying to make small incremental changes to become a better defensive team, because I think that's going to be so big for the development of Mize and Skubal and the rest, especially since Mize hasn't been a big strikeout guy. He needs a defense behind him right now. So if while Zach Short, I don't think he's going to be the everyday shortstop, and maybe he will be a guy who hits 220. Just the idea that he could be a plus shortstop out there for them is a big move. And I think they were trying to get better at second base as well, but they've had to plug Castro back in. We'll see what Willie's up to this time. But at least he got hit today.
Yeah, he did, and he does not want to go back to down in Toledo, and I don't necessarily blame him. There's nothing wrong with the city. It's a nice city. It's a glass city, whatever that you may take from that. One of the things that I have noticed about the defense, an article I did today at Motor City Bengals about AJ Hinch as a manager, is that he has not been afraid to make changes. I mean, again, some of the changes were based off injuries. Granted, I understand that. But there's been times, too, where you look at a shortstop, one of your main positions, it's one of the worst positions in all of baseball in terms of team-wise for the Tigers ranked. And it's been an Achilles heel. You have Castro at -7. Goodrum, who was a Gold Glove nomination last year, who's been struggling. He's on the IL. And you have the ability there to sit there and go, okay, well, how is he doing this with limited resources? I mean, this is the same roster that Ron Gardenhire had for a couple seasons now, or three seasons or so. And he's turned chicken salad or chicken crap into chicken salad. I mean, it's, you know, is it a bad analogy? Sure, but whatever. I mean, the point is, it's just like, it is evolving. The team is evolving under Hinch, and they're showing how they're getting things done. And the number I have, by the way, my inside number this week is, it's something that I think we brought up. I think we brought this up last week. Did we brought this up last week? Maybe. I'm not really sure. I can't remember. But the fact that the Tigers are a team that is stealing, and as a collective, in terms of from what I understand from Baseball Reference, because I know some of the stats of Baseball Reference are kind of off, but they lead the American League in steals, I believe, with 60-62. Double checking that right now, but
they were, you know, they mentioned it during the broadcast today that they were one behind the Royals, but that may have been before a steal or two, but they're right up there with the Royals in the race for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did an article about this last week about the fact that they are taking advantage of team speed. To me, is one of those things that's always been like, it's like the with the Red Wings, you got to get bigger on the blue line. It's one of those things you always hear. And you're always like, what the hell does that even mean? And a lot of times team speed has the downside of Tigers. I mean, you look at the team of the Millennium, Victor Martinez was a big dude. He wasn't going to go around. Miguel, for his size, same thing, but they have legitimate, they have the possibility to have four players with 10 or more steals. And that's something that doesn't happen very often. And with that being, I should say the number is four, because they're among the top four in all of baseball for steals. There we go.
Yeah, they're now tied with the Royals at 61. So you're right.
Okay, so 61. And for how many times, you think about it this way, for how many times the Tigers have had Curtis Granderson, everybody talks about his speed, but he wasn't a base stealer by any stretch of the imagination. He was a guy who uses speed on the bases, Grand. You know, he was a guy who get doubles and triples and all day long. But in terms of even just like, it blows my mind when you look at how AJ Hinch is kind of using the team speed. You look at the fact that here we are in, I mean, you talk about Billy Ball, you talk about, I mentioned this in an article too about Whitey Herzog, and that was all a whole thing in the Cardinals. And when his team stole bases, his record was 549 and .386. And the Tigers this year are 34-30 when I wrote the article. So I think they're probably 36-30 at this point when they steal a base. And to me, I like that aggressive play. I like that they're taking the advantage of, they don't have all the power. They don't have, he's using the best way he has. And how often do you see that as a manager? And we've talked about this before. How often does a manager matter based off his talent? And, you know, it's based off his players. So, but yeah, it's good to see a team with team speed and actually mean it and not some sort of BS blanket statement that means nothing. Like, oh yeah, he's a grinder and he's, you know, he's a team speed. You know, it actually means something. And have Derek Hill back in the lineup and possibly Daz Cameron, who's been, I guess, Nickerson mentioned on the broadcast too, that he's working his way back up. Hopefully we'll see him here shortly. So
I think that, I think you're right on. It's what they have. It's a skill set. They have enough players where they could craft it into a strength of the team. So why not use it? It'd be silly to put that on the back burner when you have so many guys that, you know, that might be one of their top two skills is the ability to steal a base. And then you just think back to some of the tugboat teams that the Tigers had, albeit good teams. But, you know, how many times do we see Victor Martinez jogging to first on a double play and Miguel, for that matter, or Prince Fielder, or Miguel Ordonez, or I can keep Marcus Thames, you know, these big hulking dudes pounding it down the base. So it is nice. It is a nice change of pace to see some guys who can really scoot out there. Helps in the outfield too.
Yeah, I mean, my first example of a team, not quote unquote Tom's or lack of team speed was Rob Deere, Cecil Fielder, Pete Cavilia. That was a team that just could. But Mil Kiler, hey, there you go, Brian Hunter, those guys. But
Brian Hunter, yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a pretty decent team there.
Tony Phillips would steal you 10-15 bags.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, no, I forget about that. He was kind of selective when he did that, right?
He wasn't a speed demon. He was just a good baseball player.
Yeah, damn good baseball player. All right, now it's time for the good and the bad, the ugly this week, and you have a couple listener questions that came in, so I'm happy for that. But let's start with the good and bad, the ugly. Youper, you go first.
Good was the. I was interested to see the Nelson Cruz trade today and the return that the Twins were able to get for a rental player. I think Ryan is a real prospect. And the other pitcher, Stotner, not bad either. Princess Way, if I was making a trade, I would love to make a trade with the Rays and try to take a little chunk out of that deep system they have. So I was really interested to see that Nelson Cruz could draw for sure one pretty solid prospect, if not two. So it does make me wonder if, you know, Jonathan Scope can stay hot, and the fact that he's a rental and he's not coming back yet. And I know it's going to lead into maybe one of the questions that we have. What's out there for Jonathan Scope? I'm not saying he's going to get the same return as Nelson Cruz, but, you know, Nelson Cruz doesn't play defense. Scope does, even if Cruz might be a little bit better hitter. But how much better of a hitter can you be than Jonathan Scope has been since June 1st? Not much, you know. So I know a lot of people, fans on Twitter, you know, and everywhere else, don't want Scope moved, and I get why, because the Tigers are playing well and he is too. But I just wonder what's out there. And Nelson Cruz's trade really raised my eyebrow a little bit today on that. Bad. We already covered it, so we don't have to go into it. I had Jake Rogers' injury down. Yeah, it's big because he was just playing well. He's an important part. He's just a, you know, and it doesn't matter. The trade is done, but it's nice to see that they were getting something from the Verlander trade, just to quiet the people who love to bring it up, if nothing else. So hopefully this isn't too bad. It's something catchers get. Hopefully he can come back and at the end of the year and show us a little more. I'm not worried about Grayson Griner. The Tigers have 64 games left to play. Even if he's Haas's caddy, he's going to play, what, maybe 18 or 20 starts? How much is that really going to hurt the team in terms of the win-loss record? That might be worth a couple wins over somebody else over the course of 20 starts, maybe not even that. So hopefully Griner takes some advantage of this opportunity with the Tigers. It might be one of his last ones. So we'll see what happens there. And my ugly is a personal thing today. I was umpiring. It was hot. I was sweating like crazy. And I had this team from Missouri who the coach, there could be nobody on, a leadoff man would come into the batter's box and he's telling the kid to step out and he's going through all these signs. It was unbelievable. And usually at this level, I never tell a kid, yeah, you got to keep a foot in the box because I don't care. We're on a timer. But it was just relentless. This guy was trying to be a Joe Big League manager, having these kids go through all these signs, stepping out of the box. Oh, my God. It was ugly.
How old are the kids?
This was 13 years old.
Okay. Yeah.
But I like you say, what is the leadoff hitter? What signs does he need? Get in the box and hit, dude. This is what the other kid's throwing a fastball and a curveball. Hit it. Run. Okay? It was unbelievable. So, but it was a good day. I had one really good game. It was a 3-2. It was that coach. They lost 3-2. But it was a wonderful baseball game. And the last two were mercy rule games. We got out of there early, about an hour and a half early, which every umpire loves on a hot day.
Nice. There you go. Never trust anybody from Missouri.
That's right.
Missouri. And Drew Strobman, by the way, just pitched last night against the Charlotte Knights, 5 innings, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And he's been pitching pretty good for Durham. And it was ironic enough. I just wrote him up on Prospects Live, and I saw his name there. So, yeah, I thought Minnesota did a really good job of addressing the lack of pitching in their system right now. Or some people that could come up from St. Paul, because St. Paul right now, they have a couple of hitters, but they don't really have a lot of pitching. So, I don't know. Chris, go ahead, Chris.
I think Joe Ryan is actually in Tokyo right now for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
So he got traded while he's in a different country, which probably isn't all that common. But he's kind of their Tarek Skubal from that draft. I think he was also a ninth rounder, or at least late rounder, who just kind of popped up out of nowhere and has crazy strikeout numbers. So, yeah, I mean, I thought the Twins did okay with it. But I'll talk about the Twins more in just a second. My good today is Jonathan India, who this just kind of feels like out of nowhere. And India was one of the bigger risers in the 2018 draft class. I remember that's when I really started digging into college baseball because the Tigers had the first pick. And, of course, they went and took Casey Mize. But Jonathan India was a guy who really rose up draft boards. He was like a second rounder for most of the draft, and suddenly he's a first rounder, and then he's a top 10 pick. And eventually went to fifth to the Reds, I believe. But there was always some questions about him because he didn't have a super long track record at Florida. Like, he wasn't great as an underclassman. And he was playing shortstop and third base, I think, but there was some, you know, skepticism that he could do that. And then, you know, the Reds believed in his bat, and then he just wasn't terribly good in his first season in pro ball. He wasn't awful or anything like that, just nothing special. He hit 259, 365, 402 between high A and double A, which is, you know, is fine for a pro debut, but, you know, you don't necessarily think that guy's going to be a stud. And then, of course, there was no season in 2020. And then this year he made the Reds, I believe, on opening day.
Yep.
And he just kind of crept up on me. Now that he's hitting 273 with like a 13.5% walk rate and a 147 ISO, you know, he's not hitting for a ton of power, but he's been their everyday second baseman, and it's a 128 WRC plus. His 2.2 F-WAR, you know, Fangraphs WAR, is the most among all rookie hitters, ahead of Adolis Garcia and Akil Baddoo.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, and you know, I've been kind of handing the National League Rookie of the Year award to Trevor Rogers for a while now of the Marlins, and he still does have 3.2 WAR. But you have to figure that the Marlins may limit his innings down the stretch. So we could see Jonathan India kind of surge past him and take home the Rookie of the Year award at the end of the year. So I don't know, that's been a good development for the Reds for sure. My bad, and I said we'd mention him, is the Minnesota Twins. Now, I don't like to cry for any division rivals, of course, but it's been such a terrible year for the Twins that I did not see coming, you know, and I thought they had a chance to win the division. I may have picked them to win the division, and I wasn't the only one. The Pecota projections had them going 91-71 with a 61% chance of winning the division, and instead they're on pace to go 69-93 and finish. Yeah, when they're behind the Tigers, the lowly Tigers, and you know, it's just been one thing after yesterday. They announced that Alex Kirilloff would be out for the year with wrist surgery that he needed since May. But he tried to give it a go, get the cortisone shot. But I think they threw in the towel there, like, yeah, whatever, season's over. They've had another collection of bizarre Byron Buxton injuries this year. Their free agent signings have almost universally been disastrous for some reason. It's wild. And today they traded away Nelson Cruz. Now, you know, we said that the return for that was pretty good, but still, it's got to be tough to be a Twins fan and, you know, kind of project or think that they're going to compete this year and suddenly realize, like, oh man, we're looking at like a top 10 draft pick again. What happened? And who knows what else they might do? Maybe they'll trade Max Kepler and Jose Berrios. And then it's like, all right, are they in another mini rebuild? Have the Tigers leapt over the Twins for good here? It's I don't know. It's kind of bad right now. We'll see what happens in the next week or so. And my ugly, and I thought maybe one of you might have picked this, and maybe you did, Raj, is the Yermin Mercedes story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yermin Mercedes. Him randomly retiring yesterday is a terrible look for what was once a really amazing story. And we kind of touched on, there were three awesome stories to begin the year. It was Yermin Mercedes, Akil Badu, and then Adolis Garcia. And Garcia is kind of maintained, and Badu is doing well. And Mercedes had that infamous incident where he hit a home run in a blowout and La Russa called him out. And since then, his stats were garbage, basically. But people want to get kind of silly and blame Tony La Russa for this. And maybe he does deserve some of the blame for like choking out the last bit of passion of this kid. but there are a lot of reasons that a kid with a career 302 batting average and .494 slugging in the minors was released by the Nats and then left unprotected by the Orioles. And it's not all to do with his lack of defensive ability. Basically, when he was tearing it up early in the year, there was a great Ken Rosenthal story about him, and it included some really damning quotes in there. And one of them was from Buck Showalter, who said, there's a reason he moved around. Trust me, it's not just pure baseball. I remember when he was taken in the Rule 5 draft, we were glad they took him.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, the book on him has been – he's a bad makeup guy, and there are 100 different ways to describe makeup. And I think for most teams, though, you know, you can be a jerk, you can be, you know, somebody you don't want to talk to. But as long as you love baseball so much that you can't kind of imagine not playing it, teams will say that he's got good makeup. You know, he wants to get better, and quitting in the middle of the season is a sure sign that maybe your makeup isn't all that great. So. I don't know. Maybe he can come back and it'll be a cool story again. Who knows what's going to happen there? But it's pretty ugly right now to me.
It set up Twitter a fire yesterday. It was just the whole speculation behind it. And one of the things that I took away from that yesterday too was just the amount of Tony La Russa people came out of nowhere to defend him, and the makeup stuff is that's news to me. I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't want to deny that Tony La Russa being an old crank may have had something to do with this, but you know, I mean, the kid, it sucks, but he's a 28-year-old who's been in the minors for most of his career. He had some success this year. He was playing fine in the minors. To just up and quit seems very strange. So,
yeah, it's just the whole thing is strange. And for Chicago right now, they've been firing all cylinders. Everybody else in the division's been kind of falling apart a little bit. So the good is the Minnesota trade, and I'll tell you why, because it affects the Tigers. So per MLB trade rumors, three teams that are looking to possibly upgrade the middle infield: Seattle Mariners, the Oakland A's, and the Boston Red Sox. And one of the things that I took away, there's a couple names that they mentioned on the A side of things, because the A's apparently have a lot of shortstops. In their system. They're a system that has a lot of guys who could go elsewhere because they're loaded with shortstops. So for example, they have Nick Allen. They have also Logan Davidson, who's in Double A right now. So they have some guys in there, and whether they're close to being ready or not, who knows? I mean, I saw somebody talk about Gage Workman possibly being a third baseman. The Tigers don't really have anybody right now. I mean, everybody talks about Zach Short being the sure thing. Sure. Youper, I know you're laughing about it, and I'm the same way. Everybody talks about, but I still think they have to address it at some point. So I think the reason why this is a good thing is because between Seattle and Oakland, and here's the thing about Seattle. It feels to me that it's strange to think that is this like, you know how they have those days without an accident signs. There should be one for Jerry DePoto for days that he hasn't made a trade yet. And it's strange to think. I mean, Seattle's played themselves in the third place right now. They're 6.5 back of Houston. They've had some, even with all the Tigers no hitter this year, with all their offensive struggles, they're still hanging around. They're still hanging around. They're giving up more runs or scoring, granted, but still, they're still competitive. So if I'm just wondering if Seattle will be a possible trade partner, that's something I'm working on too. And I know fans were like, don't trade Scope, extend them. Well, I mean, if you're going to extend them, how much is he worth? And that will get part of our question here in a second. But honestly, between Seattle and Oakland, I like the idea of those two teams being, it's a good thing because they have some, Seattle is not as deep as Oakland, but Oakland has some guys in their system that would not mind putting into the Tiger system. So
now, and both of those teams are open-minded to kind of big aggressive trades.
Yeah, exactly. And
you know, you can do business with those guys.
Yeah, and Seattle's got some arms, decent arms in their system. Or, I mean, from what I saw, Chris, on the surface view, they have some decent arms. Is that correct?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they've got we've already seen Logan Gilbert this year. They drafted Emerson Hancock. They've got George Kirby. Those are three kind of their three big arms, I think, unless I'm missing somebody. I also like Brandon Williamson, the lefty out of TCU. Yeah, I mean, I actually – I don't know if you saw it, but I wrote an article tonight about possible – trade destinations for Robbie Grossman. And then I don't think the Tigers are necessarily going to trade Grossman and Scope, but Seattle was one of them because, and I thought it would make sense because their outfield has done really poorly this year, despite the fact that they've got some, you know, exciting young prospects out there. You know, they lost Kyle Lewis to an injury. Jared Kelenic has been disappointing. You know, he's young.
Taylor Trammell has been a drop off too.
Yeah, so I mean, Jake Fraley's been great, and Mitch Haniger's really good. But I thought Grossman could help him, you know, put him over the top. And in the meanwhile, they could get Scope to play second base and first base or whatever they need. And because they have Kelenic and they have Julio Rodriguez, I thought maybe they'd be willing to part with one of their outfield prospects and possibly one of their infield prospects. So that's a possibility. I like Oakland too. Like you mentioned that Allen kid, it might be one of the best defensive shortstops in all of minor league baseball. He's a crazy defender. He's only like 5'8". So he's always been doubted, but he's just a spectacular defender and he can hit a little bit too. So that would be kind of fun.
Yeah. The one idea that I liked a lot was the idea for Diego Castillo. Cause that'd be awesome. I know the Yankees have discussed possibly not. They're not trying to move all their high prospect or guys, but I mean, look at. I mean, Lewis Gill. By the way, Lewis Gill threw a new hitter last night, combined with two of the relievers for Scranton for the Rail Riders. So they got some teeth. That Yankee system is sick.
Yeah, they've really kind of they've seen a lot of guys take a step up in the last year or two. The Oswald Peraza is a guy you guys went and saw when he first started there in Somerset. He hit his fifth home run for Double A the other day. He's got 24 steals and 10 home runs this year, and he's 21 playing shortstop in Double A. Supposed to be able to stick there. They've got Anthony Volpe, who just moved up from Low A to High A, I believe. So those are two middle infielders that I thought they probably wouldn't move. But Diego Castillo is a guy who can hit. He's got, you know, doesn't ever strike out really. I mean, he strikes out a little bit, but he puts the bat on the ball, and he started hit for power this year. I was like, well, that's, you know, how many middle infielders do they need? They can get rid of some of those for a little outfield help when they've got, you know, the ghost of Brett Gardner playing center field and everybody else in the outfield is injured. They got, you know, a walk-off hit from Ryan Lamar last night, which was kind of cool. You know, former Michigan player, a kid from Jackson. That's fun, but yeah, he's not an everyday regular. They could really use Robbie Grossman.
Yeah, I mean, really? Greg Allen's come up from AAA out of nowhere and has provided some
spark. Yeah, wasn't he? He was with
Cleveland
for a while, wasn't he? Yeah, he's a speedy guy, I thought, or maybe not, but anyway.
Yeah, so the bad is the late draft, and it was an article well done by RJ Anderson of CBS Sports, and I really liked the way it was laid out because it does feel, I don't know about you guys, but it does feel a little weird that here we are 2 weeks later talking the trade deadline. And I know that they mentioned that MLB is trying to make it into a spectacle. I get it. Cause they're trying to do like what other sports do. I get it. But I guess a lot of, for scouting purposes and everything, it's kind of hurting everything. It's kind of throwing things off and rightfully so in a sense, because I mean, I hope that they go back to the June format. Cause I actually like it in June. So I can kind of get a break in between there, and it allows that for potential possible better trade ideas, and now they're kind of scrambling a little bit. But not to mention, I just think even with the rules with Rob Manfred changing the they're getting rid of the seventh inning games, they're getting rid of the runner on second. I think this is bad in the sense that baseball, I after reading the article and then I thought about it, really, and just independently thinking about this, I hope they move back to June. I really don't think that they handled it very well. Even now, we're waiting to see when the Tigers or Jacksonville will be signing any moment. But there's, I know the minor league season is going until end of September, I believe now, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think that you can't, like right now, at this time in 2019, we're able to see more players. Instead, we might not see some players till August, or if at all. Like Ty Madden could be not playing, for example. So I think that's bad. I think that that kind of harms the minor league game a little bit too as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the stated purpose was to get eyes on it because there would be no other games to watch. But I thought the original plan was to do it in conjunction with the College World Series, which would be in June, I believe, just a little bit later in June.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I think I'd be fine with that. Again, you're not necessarily I don't know, you're kind of cramming it in there with other events, but you might get, I mean, they still only got like a handful of people to show up this year, which is kind of one of the things you'd like to do to make it a more, spectacular spectacle, if you will. But yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see it move back a little bit too, just because it's definitely that RJ Anderson article was really good about like just how tough it is on these front offices to be focused all on this and then suddenly have to switch and get these guys signed. And then also check out trades. You know, it's a lot to put on their table in like a 3 week period.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a rough go about it in terms of even like just, you know, we overheard people talking about it behind us in Erie about how they've been just traveling all over the place, and so that kind of travel schedule, that kind of upness, does not help. And my ugly this week, and it's been a while since I mentioned them, and it's welcome back to the Marlins. As the Marlins are been struggling, they went after that, they 300, just under 500 first 2 months of the season. Then they had a free for all in June going 10-17. Although they were scoring runs, they just were not getting the kind of run support they needed. Or excuse me, they just weren't, their pitching's been pretty good, but they just have not been able to score enough runs. They're 9-20 in one run games. It's kind of insane to think about that. Well, but the Marlins have been able to just lose in ugly ways. I mean, when we talk about that one pitch gone kind of moment, and then they just go out and lose on Monday night 18-1 to the Nationals. Of all teams that you would have told me that they would have lost to, 18-1 to the Nationals. That was one of those games where I was just like, I thought I was, you know, high or something, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, what just happened? Because the Marlins have, again, in terms of getting pitched, they have not allowed more. Their biggest, in terms of runs allowed, has been 8 or 9 runns tops. And they go out and offensively speaking, the Nationals are not what they tend to be. I mean, Shea Turner is having a really good year, but 18 runs, can you name a couple Nationals on there? They're just like, I mean, Josh Harrison. It's like a hodgepodge of 4A players out there right now in terms of just, yeah. You know.
Well, Juan Soto has been on fire since the home run derby.
True.
And I assume they still have Trey Turner out there, but yeah,
four RBIs in that game.
So the Nationals, there's got to be some type of record. Perhaps they lost a 24-8 game and they won an 18-1 game in like a 4 day period.
Yeah, it's crazy. You're absolutely right, Uper. And then you see, you know, Josh Harrison being a productive player. Like, where was that Josh Harrison in Detroit, or Jody Mercer being somewhat of a productive player who was coming off the bench? That, I don't know. Anyway, it's a stranger thing. It was just the Marlins have kind of taken a free-for-all for a little bit, and I thought that they were one of the up-and-coming teams in the NL East based off their pitching talent alone. They have a really good farm system, and I thought they would come in through, so they kind of stepped back a little bit. But that is my good and bad ugly this week. So, Chris, we have some questions.
So I saw one from Nick Spillane. He said, if the Tigers actually did attempt to extend Jonathan Scope, what do you think is a fair contract for both sides in years money wise? In other words, what would your max threshold deal that you think Scope is worth? So you're curious what you guys think.
Well, I would hope they could get creative. But I think the simplest thing would be no more than 2 years, maybe 2 years with a team option, or 2 years with a player option, a player opt out after 1 year. And because the good news there is if he opts out, that means he had a pretty good year for you. So I would try to do something in that range. In terms of the money, I don't know, 10, 12 million a year. I mean, if he did 2 years, 22 million, does that seem fair?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's an interesting one to me because I try to think about, you know, he's been a free agent each of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And what he got was a one-year, $6 million deal from the Tigers, you know, one of the worst teams in baseball. And he was very productive in a 60-game span, but apparently teams didn't buy into it. So he got a one-year and, what, $4.5 million deal for the Tigers this year? Again, one of the worst teams in baseball. So I don't necessarily think that Jonathan Scope has completely changed as a player, at least in the perception of the rest of baseball. So I can't imagine him getting a giant deal. Just for whatever reason, he's not terribly valued on the market. You know, he's basically a major league average player. We saw, you know, that's kind of a Robbie Grossman style player. He's getting $5 million a year. I would think he won't get more than like $8 million a season. I agree with you, but I would do like a 2 year, $8 million a year. So 2 for $16 million maybe with a $2 million opt out for a Scope. So it could be 1 year and $10 million for him if he does well and can opt out.
Yeah.
But anything beyond that, I just don't think that the market is there for him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe other teams will be like, all right, hey, he's made some real changes. And we talked before, I think he's not necessarily swinging out of the zone as much as he used to, but he's always going to be an aggressive hitter who swings a lot, and he'll go through these streaks that we've seen. And I don't know. There are certain levels of player, you know, that are productive. CJ Krohn's another one who seems to be fairly productive every year, but based on where he plays and the other options available, he doesn't get a ton of money. And I can't see Scope getting a huge deal. Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, I think what he's looking for is a 3 year, 4 year deal. I think that's why he hired Scott Boras, because the idea of him getting 3 years, maybe $30 million, like $10 million per season or something like that, or $12 million, so 3 years, maybe $36 million or something like that. Maybe that's what he's looking for. I don't know for sure, but I'm with you guys. I think that no more than $10 million, $11 million per season. I think 2 years is good because I think it gives you enough opportunity to see what the Tigers have within their system if they're going to do that, or they just go out and find. I mean, I for me, it would be nice just for the Tigers to, I don't know, develop a second baseman by now. Good Lord. I mean, it's been almost 50 years. 50 years. Think about that for a second. Think about that for a second, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? No, seriously. You've been around. You're older than us. Think about this, okay? And I'm saying this, and I meant that in a nice way. I didn't mean that as in a dickish, like, you're old, you know. No, but think about this. Think about this, Youper, okay? Yeah. You had Lou Whitaker. That transitioned to what? Damon Easley.
Yep.
Then Omar Infante. Yep. Then Plácido Blanco,
right?
Then Scott Sizemore for whatever reason. Then
and Will Rimes.
Will Rimes, of course, yeah. Will Rimes, the great Will Rimes.
Then back to Infante, right?
Infante, yeah. And then you got Ian Kinsler, and then Scheit after that. I mean, it's like it's been a carousel.
You left out Warren Morris. Come on.
Oh, I'm sorry. The great 2003 great Warren Morris. Ooh, LSU great Warren Morris. See, this is how bad I. Look at me. I know that what college you went to on top of my head. That's not even – anyway, I digress. But develop a second baseman, please.
Well, I think to your point, it's not even developing a second baseman. It's developing an infielder because nobody goes out to develop a second baseman. They develop – like Lou Whitaker was the third baseman, I thought, basically, when he was young.
Yes, that's
correct. You put a guy at second base who can handle it, and it's nice to have a good second baseman. But yeah, they haven't developed a third baseman or a shortstop either. So,
Luke, get the hell out of here, man.
Hey, he was. There's a video of floating around of me doing a from 10, 12 years ago of me doing a Jim Leland impression, talking about Scott Sizemore looking good, looking tan. Oh, I remember Leland had made some sort of comment about Sizemore looking tan. Like, oh, he looks good. He's tan. But 50 games later, he was gone. I mean, I thought he did play fairly well briefly for the Athletics before.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you want to talk about a second baseman that they developed but then traded away and then got hurt was Devin Travis. He had
–
had him, traded him away. He got hurt after 2 years, but he was pretty good for two seasons with Toronto.
Yeah, I think he's a scout now for the Jays, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
Well, then Suarez.
Yeah.
Hey, Eugenio.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know. It's a shame. I was really actually looking. One thing I was looking forward to for the next few weeks was if they were going to play Isak Paredes at second base and see if it sticks. And now, boom, he goes, gets hurt almost immediately. So that sucked. they need to develop better. I mean, we know this. Maybe Colt Keith is that guy. Maybe he's the infielder they develop.
Yeah,
that was the name that stuck out to me when we started this conversation. So
he's been playing a little bit of second base down there.
He hit his first home run a couple nights ago.
Yeah, and it wasn't a cheapie. That's another thing that I'll go into. He doesn't necessarily hit for a ton of power yet, but he's a big, strong kid who hits the ball hard. I was looking at minor league splits. He's got tied for the second hardest hit ball for Tigers, or third hardest hit ball for a kid down in high A today this year. 109.8 miles per hour off the bat, just behind Workman and Kerr. He's not a guy who really lost the ball yet. He's a more of a line drive hitter. You could hear him on he was Dan Hastie's second guest on the Road to Detroit podcast, and he seems like a fun kid for sure, and he's got a very kind of distinct approach. Like, he knows what he wants to do. He wants to hit line drives, and that's what he does. And yeah, you know, you get a line drive gap hitter who takes some walks. That'll work at second base or third base, really. I mean, you want a little bit more power there, but if he's going to hit, I'll take him anywhere. And then, like we said, Cody Clemens, 3 home runs in the last 2 games. Don't forget about him, even though he's, I doubt he'll hit the major league level.
Yeah, he's playing the outfield too, so they could get some more position versatility. And you know what, Cole Keith, he's always going to be good in my book. You know why? Because he likes his own statuses when we post about him on Tiger Mountain. It is great. No, it's like immediately when we put a Colt Keith thing up, he's like, he likes it. I'm like, see, why can't other players just do that? Why can't players just
Yeah, and that was one of the cool things about him in that interview with Hastie. I encourage people to go listen to it. Where he was basically like, he said he got to play with some other guys. Yeah, I mean, calling him a second baseman.
No, Mitch, you're right. Yeah, he was a second baseman.
He stood at second base. He was... He needed a flak jacket. He should have had a flak jacket on to block the baseball, but he stood out there at second base.
Oh, that's good. As you were saying, I'm sorry, Chris. Did I interrupt you?
No, I don't remember what I was saying. It's fine.
Colt Keefe is awesome. It's just...
the interview, he seems very, very confident and not in like a cocky way. He was like, he was just saying like he would be practicing with guys like Trevor Swaggerty, who went in the first round for the Pirates a couple years ago. And he's like, man, I'm as good as him. Like in a very matter of fact way, like I could do this. Like it, and he said, you know, it was tough for him in the instructional league going against guys from AA and AAA, but he figured it out and was like, hey, I think I can do this. Like, and I'm pretty good. Like he was saying that. It was a very refreshing sort of honest answer of somebody who believes in his own ability, but isn't cocky about it. That was another reason that I kind of dig him.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets to West Michigan before the end of the year. That'd be nice.
So, yeah, that would be very cool.
If we circle back to the way we started on this question, what are the odds that they would extend Jonathan Schoop before end of the season? Because I think it's really, really, really low.
Yeah, I would say nil.
Yeah. I mean, this is a front office that has shown, no offense to anybody listening out there, because obviously I can't offend the front office people or the PR department get on me, but truth be told, it's nothing against the front office. It's just Tigers, they haven't demonstrated that yet. So again, I'm going by history. If that makes me a cynical prick or a team hater, no, it's just, you look at what they're doing right now. They haven't really extended anybody. They haven't extended anybody since Cabrera, correct?
They haven't offered an extension to, you know, they signed a couple of major league contracts, but no extensions since Cabrera. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Avila came out and spoke to the press the other day and said, hey, we're basically explicitly said the rebuilding is over. We're trying to build now. And we're, he even said that, like, hey, we're not going to try to cut payroll. We don't have to. We could even take on payroll if we needed to, which was like, okay, what does that mean? Are you going to trade for somebody, or is that just saying that you've got money? So, I mean, maybe that would be a sign. Maybe like, hey, we're committed. We like what we're seeing. Jonathan Scope has been a great professional in every way from what you could see in the Tigers. A couple times in the last week, he did really nice, you know, pieces of hitting where he would go the opposite way.
Yep.
With men on base. It was like, yeah, I mean, that's super refreshing to have a guy like that who's going to execute. So maybe they do say, you know what? We like him. He's still 29. Maybe he's a piece of our future. I don't see it. I don't necessarily think of him as being the sort of complete player that you want to extend.
Yeah. Go ahead, Yupra. I'm sorry.
Well, Boris is going to want to see the market too. I mean, that's the other thing. Other than maybe Elvis Andrus and maybe a couple others, not many Boris guys extend in season. So I think the writing's on the wall. But I think the biggest thing is, and I like Jonathan Scope too. I like him from the Baltimore days when he played the WBC for Netherlands. I love getting up early in the morning and watching WBC from Japan. And Scope played well out there a couple of years, so I kind of took a liking to him. So I don't want to see him go by for any particular reason. But I just don't think you can worry about losing a Jonathan Scope, okay? I don't think he's the core of the next contender. I think he's a nice, complimentary, second-tier player. And if he chooses to go elsewhere because he's got a better offer than what you think, then you move on to the next guy, because there should be another Jonathan Scope out there someplace.
The reason why I was going to say the spending is when I saw Chris Makowski on the Detroit News write about is Damon Candelario's contract, because it's coming up, arbitration eligible, is raised to be too rich for the Tigers' blood as he make him trade bait. It's like, well, wait a minute then. So why would he write? I mean, and I say this because Makowski has a tendency to write, let's just say, team-friendly things. And so sometimes when things go out there like that, or Lynn Henning sometimes says they're not going to spend, it is kind of confusing sometimes. So this is where I'm kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it. I don't, because every time the narrative is out there among the media, even from what we hear sometimes too, it's like we don't really know. And so truth be told, if Alavila is saying that, great. But last year you also said too, they were going to spend this offseason and they didn't.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you look at the free agent market next year, and everybody is projecting them to take a, you know, one of the big shortstops. But would you rather, like, you go out there and you look, Chris Taylor is a free agent. Would you rather have him or Jonathan Scope? Taylor has played shortstop. He's played center field. He plays second base. He walks. He hits for power. He steals bases. He's, how old is he, 31, 32? I'm looking. He's 30. He'll be 31 at the end of this year. Like, would you rather pay Jonathan Scope this year or try to make like a legit offer for Chris Taylor? And then you've got, at worst, you've got a super utility player. And at best, you've got like an everyday middle infielder for probably not too expensive. I mean, he'll probably get $12, $16 million a year or something like that. But I mean, if you really want to try to win, I'd rather have Chris Taylor than Jonathan Scope.
And the other thing is you can make a goal to go after a Taylor and those kind of players and still pivot back to Scope because, Jonathan Scope's not going to be a day one free agent signing. Okay.
Yeah.
There's not going to be a rush to get him in camp in the fold for somebody. If you're looking in January and the moves you were thinking about haven't worked out, you can always probably pivot back to Scope and get some kind of deal done because they've done it the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, there's no rush there, and that's another thing. Like, I don't know, if they've got money to spend, go into the offseason and see who you can spend it on. Mm-hmm. You don't have to dance with who you brung, or who brung you, however that goes.
Yeah, and by the way, another thing that really quick before I forget too, Mitch or Drew Hutchinson had another strong evening, 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 8 strikeouts on 79 pitches, efficient. So he could be a name that could be coming up here shortly as well. based off the fact that Tigers need starters. It's three starts in a row that Hutchinson's been able to pitch somewhat well. So that's a positive sign. I mean, again, is that the Federer treatment or what, or the Federer effect? I don't know. But either way, it's good to see that. And the Tigers definitely, because if the Tigers, here's the thing about the trade deadline before I go, before I don't think we have any more questions. I think the Tigers should address getting another starter, whether it's a cost-effective starter or something that's going to help them just bridge the gap and cost control. I love the pitcher out of Colorado. Drawing a blank now. I also know his name.
Germán Márquez.
Yeah, Márquez. I love Márquez. He's under control until 2024. That's more of a pipe dream. But I wouldn't mind if, you know, if the Rockies are willing to shed salary, I wouldn't mind him coming here to the Tigers for a couple of years and providing a good starter. They need to spend – I think they need to spend money on starting pitching because just looking at – I mean, even the draft's not going to fix it all because, I mean, these guys – some of these guys are not going to be ready to go. I mean, Matt might be a reliever for all we know. But they really need to – I think if they do make a trade for Scope, if they do trade Scope, address the middle infield because if Paredes is not – he's got a hip problem in it, and that could be a thing that could linger and address the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things to address still.
Yes.
I mean, if you're counting on Torkelson and Green and Dingler to come up and eventually be at least average major league players, if not above average or plus, that's just three positions. We like Badu. We think he's got a chance to be an everyday regular. Beyond that, though, I mean, like, yeah, there's got plenty of room to fill. We Scooble and Mize, we like them as stalwarts in the rotation. Still have Boyd for another year, probably. I don't think they're going to randomly trade him in the next 10 days. So, yeah, there's plenty of room to add talent. So I'd love to see them go out and grab a good starting pitcher in addition to a shortstop or, you know, whatever. Just go get good players. Go get Chris Taylor. Go get Germán Márquez. Start trying to, instead of celebrating being close to a 500 team, let's put some pressure on the top of the division.
Oh, speaking of putting pressure on the top of the division, put it on 500, I'm going to declare right now. This is my declaration. I've said it on Twitter, and this is now officially on audio. If the Tigers make it over 500, if the Tigers get to 500 in the next 3 weeks, if they get to 500, I will jump into a pool of Jello or something. Chris,
I can't.
No, all right. Listen. You got to come up with the terms. I'll jump into something that's not normal. Okay.
How about a mud pit?
No mud. The reason why I say no mud is because there's things in mud that make you sick. And I know a buddy of mine that did the Tough Mudder. And he got really sick because of the parasite in the mud. And I'm like, no. I'm like, if it's a food substance, great. Food, fine. Mud, I'm good. I'm just
okay.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm trying to think of what could be.
The audience could pick it.
What wouldn't be? But it's gonna be cost prohibitive no matter what. Like, we're gonna make a giant kiddie pool of Jello or marshmallows or pudding. I mean, I think it's gonna be an issue.
Milk and Cheerios.
There you go. The Tigers, so their next 10 games, they've got, three against the Royals, three against the Twins, and four against the Orioles?
Yep.
If they go 7-3 in those 10 games, they're 500, right? I mean, it's possible.
All right. Well, either way, if the audience has any creative ideas of what I should jump into or do something that – I'm not going to get a tattoo, obviously, but so something that is creative, please let me know. No offense to Jed. Jed is a trooper for what he did, but – just something that if the Tigers get to 500, because look, it is great. I love this stretch of baseball. I absolutely love it. I'm not complaining. I'm not being cynical, but at the same time, we've watched enough baseball between all of us. You have to kind of look at it in a base of reality. And again, I will ride that. I mean, I love that, the quote unquote Tigers Twitter and everybody's all happy and everything. And I love it. I love the energy. But we just keep in realism. The Tigers, I mean, AJ Hinch should deserve some manager of the year because of what he's done. It's been a miracle. And I'm glad the Tigers are just under 500. So that being said, if they get over 500, I'll jump into something. I don't know what it is. I'll jump into something and it'll be supervised. It'll be like, because, the new Jackass movie has come out in the fall. So I got to celebrate that. I love Jackass, by the way. It's a, some of it, when they do the poop stuff, I'm like, ugh. But other than that, like some, yeah, some, yeah, they've done some stuff. I'm like, really? Or the lice, or the, what was the one where they shaved the hair and they had like crabs in it, or like some sort of, and they put it on their face. Like,
no.
Raj, would you bungee jump?
I have bungee jump. I don't know if a 280-pound man should bungee jump, but I mean, I've lost weight recently, thank God. But you know, I would consider it. But again, we have to do something cost prohibited. So you're right, Chris. That's a good point. Cost is key. If Jell-O's cheap to make, and my, you know, Lord forbid, my wife was gonna make.
What if we could find a sponsorship of a parachuting of a plane company that would take you up to parachute?
All right, you know what? Okay, if anybody knows anybody out there to do that, deal. I'll do it. I'll parachute out of a plane if the Tigers hit 500. There we go.
Wow.
Again, but I'm not. Again, I'm not paying for it. I've already paid for enough. If anybody wants to sponsor this opportunity, let me know. You know, I've been on Woodward Sports, so hey, Woodward Sports, if you have an opportunity or have an idea, let us know. I'm down for it. I'm down. I mean, I will embarrass myself to make this happen. I will do that. So,
Yeah.
You got to take some risks sometimes, and we're not getting any older. So if anybody has an opportunity, pass it on to us, let us know. I'm down for it because I have two bad ankles, but I will jump. And, you know, it was funny. Stick from Woodward Sports to talk about you didn't get a lot of air in your jump. You're right.
The Tigers are in must win mode now.
Yeah. Look, if everybody wants to see me jump into something, let me know, because then again, maybe our listeners are kind of weird. Sometimes they'll respond and sometimes they won't. But honestly, if you're listening right now and you're about to finish up your day, get us on Twitter at Rajcast Baseball or Chris0914, ChrisBrown194, Youper_IA. And let us know that you've heard this part and go, you know what? I want Roger to jump into, you know, like, or if you've seen the state, I'll dip my, you know, I'm not going to, no, I'm not going to do that. Anyway, but yeah, I just wanted to end the podcast on that note. And Saturday, we're going to be at West Michigan for the Whitecaps and Lansing, as it's the Copa Yutonas, or the West Michigan Calavacas. I'm horrible.
Calaveras, I believe.
Calaveras, okay. I speak better Spanish than that, ladies and gentlemen. I do.
Copa de la Diversión.
Yeah, Copa de Diversión. I'm not even reading it right now. I'm just saying off the top of my head, and I look like an asshole. So my own cultures right now is like, dude, what the hell is wrong with your Spanish? It's getting late. So on that being said, thanks so much for watching. We appreciate everybody's watching on YouTube this evening. Thanks to Luke, Mitch for the comments, Dave, Eddie, Corporal. I'm doing a really bad salute, but hopefully, Eddie, thanks for stopping by. And yes, we are a handsome crew. We'll be back next week. We'll be Saturday. We'll have some surprises in store. Hopefully, there'll be some. We'll be able to do some player interviews too. We have some guys in mind that Chris and I have discussed.
Nice.
And yeah, we'll be on the road Saturday, and then hopefully we'll be back in Erie sometime soon in August too. Because it's already gonna be August, guys. It's already gonna be August. This year has gone by so quickly. So again, keep those suggestions rolling. We appreciate the questions. Thanks so much for all the feedback. We'll see you next time. And have a good week, everybody.